Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements with black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin tail pro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we rise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black on, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Malcolm Garvey, here we study. Malcolm Garvey, here we. Their life was like a movie study. Malcolm Garvey, here we. Malcolm Garvey, here we. Malcolm Garvey, here we. Their life was like a movie.
I organize, everything I do's revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like B's, really think you should. I study Malcolm Garvey Huey, Malcolm Garvey Huey, Marcel Cody with the Uzi, listening to Fela Kuti. I'm a goon with the machete, especially if it's deli. Got the Santos for the Hexy to protect me, so respect me. This is heavy, legendary, revolutionary. My wifey, she resurrect me when they thought they had me buried. Took me out the cemetery, now it's family over every. Cause it's all that's necessary to avoid the commissary. I'ma live for you five, so I stop to get high. If you know, then you recognize. It's that black and brown pride. It's the power of the mind. All
RBG, guard the vine. You can see through the lies if you can read between the lines.
I live, I die, I organize. Everything I do, revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these, really think you should.
Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Malcolm Garvey Huey, Bungie, Bobby, Pac, and Tookie. Sitting by the door so you can say I'm acting spooky. Just like in the movie, son, you better pack your toolie. Niggas switch, be acting fruity, you'll be cracking like they pookie. Rather smoke a doobie than be burning and eluding. Bang, bang, pig shooting, we should blame Rudy Julie. Yanny for the camera, shine a white and nose candy. Let you banging on the system, you a gangster wearing panties. RBG, my family, from the Bronx to Miami. Police cannot stand me, Pacquiao like a Manny. Call me little Bobby Hutton, cause I'm first to push the button. Rappers don't be saying nothing to the system, we say fuck em. This is for Nahanda, mama C, mama Akua. All the real OGs, I'm a soldier, cause you told me study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, I'm reporting in the duty.
Sticky icky, yours truly here for duty. Don DeVino, M.A. Uno, you know how we drop the jury. This is real, not a movie, not Mickey Donald Goofy. I'm a soldier, I avoid a bitch nigga like the cootie.
School face in a hoodie.
Fresh pair of khakis, we can do this like we fam. I go to war like the Apache for whatever. I stay ready, I learned that in Tallahassee. Robert Toon, they used to school me as a juvie. Skipping classes, never let the system use me. My duty is my passes. Watch the homies in your army, they don't always show their badges. Keep your family living healthy, teach your children about their blackness. Teach your wifey how to use the ratchet. This shit is classic, get your food, clothes, and shelter. Fuck the system, pimp it backwards. I ain't hating, I'm just saying. If you wanna be a rapper, study
Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
A tactical approach is designed to get certain results. It's designed to keep you alive. It's designed to bring about victory.
Show is the main set. Fuck living basic, I'm taking risks. Fuck what they saying, I'm saying this. Don't waste your time, it don't make you rich, it don't mean nothing, so fuck them, let's make a grip. Double up, triple up, make assists. Ballin' so hard you can play a bitch. Lead to the lake if they wanna fish. Make sure them niggas around you stick to the script. It should be written in stone. You should come visit my zone. Don't take my word, double check all of my flows. Ask them how hustle got on, but fuck what you heard. This for who walked down that road. Sold everything but they stole. Straight off the curb. Real niggas rich as you nerds. Addressing whom and making songs.
Don't do it for nothing. Nah.
The moment that is bound to shape the future.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it. They telling me to get it. It said that the message I was bringing brought destruction. I put the pants in the bag and said, fuck him. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me from the jump. They'd rather see me slumped, face down, shot 5 or 6 times with my kid and my mama in the cop car brown. And I'm done, stop lying. It's a black and white thing. Redneck ass judge would rather watch a nigga hang than indict what's white, not right. Fuck a newsfeed. Black man got the same needs as the Jews need. Who me? I demand reparation. Fuck a cowboy. I'm a native rather of my nation. I'm an African. Black man, fuck down my language. Got me praying to a white boy God. That's insane. And if you ask me why they steadily harass me, I reply with that these motherfuckers nasty. And I'm a god, yet they calling me a nigga. They scared of me, so they try to hide behind the trigger. Acting badass. Fuck a honky with the badge. I'm a nigga with an attitude. You can kiss my black ass. Ain't no sense in niggas being diplomatic. Televise the revolution. Let these motherfuckers have it. I'm calling up the homies. They said to come through. And I run with the niggas. They scared to come shoot. Take an eye for an eye. Take a tooth for tooth. Do unto others as them others would do all to you. And all they say is make America great. What America hates. Kept America straight. And America safe. Motherfuck that flag. My people are not free. We wanna touch that flag. So quick to try to copyright what came for free. Now they blaming me. And it's plain to see that they mad at that. Like I'm a magic act. Yeah, imagine that. Motherfucker, I'm black. Fucking vultures. Super quick to steal one's culture. Trying to make it your own. Caveman, go home. Over 10 long nose, funny looking ass Donald. Got his nerve disrespecting President Obama. If you don't want us around, then let us leave. Pay the money you've been owing my people since they were set free. That 40 acres and a mule never came, but yet we're still outstanding. Outstanding in the rain, just waiting. Patient, pacing, and praying for God to step up. But now it ain't shit shaking. I was mistaken, thinking scripture could've helped us. Following the faith of our very own oppressors. No justice, just us. Look at how the aftermath of slavery today still affects us. Our kids educated by the enemy. And they don't know shit about their history. Cause they ain't teaching at school. Leave it up to them coons. And all that's cool. Let the bygones be bygones. And besides, we've been killing off our homes. Shut the fuck up, you know what? Uncle Tom, house nigga, slaves, see they motherfucking nuts cut. I pack steel in the hour of the chaos. If black lives still don't matter till you stay out.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, it's born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed, this that I got realness, I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dumb.
just win again, then win again like Wimbledon. I serve, yeah, that's him again. The sound, the engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch. Your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish, I gauge. See, my pedigree most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA, born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate. And I'm gon' shine like I'm supposed to. Antisocial, extrovert, and excellent mean an extra work. And absentness, what the fuck you hurt? And passiveness never struck my nerve. And that's a riff, gonna plead this case. The reason my power's here on earth. Salute the truth and the prophecy. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA.
This is why I say that hip-hop has done more damage to young African-Americans than racism in recent years.
I live about my DNA. This is my heritage, all I'm inheriting. Money and power, the maker, I'm emeritus. Tell me something, you motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I'd rather die than to listen to you. My DNA not for imitation, but DNA an abomination. This how I dish when you in the matrix, out your bullets, reaping what you're sowing, stacking up the footage, living on the go and sleeping in the pillar, sipping from a Grammy, walking in the building, diamond in the ceiling, marble on the floors, peaches out the window, peeking out the window, baby in the pool, Godfather calls, only Lord knows. I've been going hammer, dodging paparazzi, freaking through the cameras, eat it for a daughter's rock, wearing sandals, yoga on the Monday, stretches in the banner, watching all the snakes, curving all the fakes. Phone never own, I don't camera stage, I don't compromise, I just penetrate. Sex, money, murder, these are the breaks, these are the times. Level number 9, look up in the sky, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, tennis on the way. Motherfucker, I got winners on the way. You ain't shit without a buddy on your belt. You ain't shit without a ticket on your plate. You ain't sick enough to put it on yourself. You ain't rich enough to hit the ladder gate. Tell me when destruction gonna be my fate. Gonna be a fate, gonna be a fate. Peace to the world, let it rotate. Sex, money, murder, IDA.
Welcome to the Great African Leadership Series, where we feature great inspirational speeches and quotes from African leaders.
Fellow freedom fighters, comrades and friends, it is my great pleasure to welcome you to Accra and to this conference of African freedom fighters and supporters of the growing movement for Africa's liberation and unity. It is good for our cause to have a periodic meeting of this kind to examine our position in the great struggle to rid Africa completely and forever of imperialism and its handmaidens, colonialism and neocolonialism. Africa is rich and not poor. As the great wealth that has been taken out of our continent over 5 centuries of despoliation and extortion, very well put. Africa has immense actual and potential wealth, gold, diamond, copper, manganese, bauxite, iron ore, uranium, asbestos, chrome, cobalt, a host of other minerals. Our essential agricultural produce have all been drained away by colonialist imperialism. Africa is far from being poor. It is Africans who are poor, not Africa. And they are poor because of the uncounted profit that has been made out of the exploitation of their labor and their lands. If we are being bid to enter a European community, we must have something that community needs, and needs badly, when it pretends to offer a bonus by way of aid. When Greeks come bearing grapes, should we not look them well in the mouth, if I may mix my metaphor, but I'm sure you get my meaning. I raise this point so that it will stay in your mind when you may be tempted by the seductive promises of new colonialism to forget the real character of colonialist imperialism and be persuaded away from your own true interests and those of Africa. For today, we must each see ourselves as part of Africa in order that we may face colonialist imperialism and its new form, new colonialism, on a continent-wide front. For unity must be the keynote of our actions. Our enemies are many, and they stand ready to pounce upon and exploit our very weakness. They tell us that this particular person or that particular country has greater or more favorable potentialities than the other. They do not tell us that we should unite, that we are all as good as we are able to make ourselves once we are free. Remember, always, that you have four stages to make. First, the attainment of freedom and independence. Secondly, the consolidation of that freedom and independence. Thirdly, the creation of unity and community between the free African states. Fourth, the economic and social reconstruction of Africa. This requires some plain speaking. And for the sake of Africa, let us speak plainly. As I see, our greatest danger stems from disunity and the inability to see that the realization of our hopes and aspirations, the realization of our objective of total African independence and of our future progress and prosperity is inextricably bound up with the necessity to unify our policy and actions in connection with the continuous struggle for independence and the greater task of economic and social reconstruction beyond it. We must therefore face the issue of African unity now. For only unity will make the artificial boundaries and regional demarcations imposed by colonialism obsolete and superfluous. African unity will thus provide an effective remedy for border disputes and internecine troubles. In a united Africa, there could be no frontier claims between Ethiopia and Somalia, or between Zanzibar and Kenya, Guinea or Liberia, or between Ghana, Togoland and the Ivory Coast. Because we would regard ourselves as one great continental family of nations. Some of the leaders, it must be confessed, do not see the struggle of their brother Africans as part of their own struggle. Even if they did, they would not be free to express their solidarity. This rift are consciously created by the imperialists between Africans, where they can sit back and watch with sly satisfaction, as well as contempt for those who fail to see how they are being used against Africa's best interests. Regrettably, those states include some who were among the freedom fighters of yesterday and who haven't won their independence, are willing to drop it for some token aid and thereby deny to those still struggling for freedom even their moral support. Here is a phenomenon against which all African freedom fighters must be on their guard and resist to the utmost. Even though I appreciate the difficulties facing us, I must admit, I find it strange to watch some of us returning willingly to the colonialist fold. This time, they don't even have to They don't even have the excuse of being forced to subject themselves to foreign domination. It makes one wonder, why so much effort and sacrifice and so many lives were given up to the achievement of independence in the first place, if it can only be so quickly and easily surrendered. We must begin to build immediately our own continental common market. For it is easy for anyone who studies the common market organization closely to realize that the common market is aimed at harnessing the African countries to satisfy the profit loss of the imperialist bloc and to prevent us from following an independent neutralist policy. It is easy to see that the imperialists and the colonialists are determined to retain the African countries in the position of suppliers of cheap raw materials. If we do not resist this threat, and if we throw in our lot with the common market, we shall doom the economy of Africa to a state of perpetual subjection to the economy of Western Europe. This will, of course, hinder the industrialization of our young African states. It is impossible to think of economic development and national independence without possessing an unfettered capacity for maintaining a strong industrial power. The activities of the common market are therefore fraught with dangerous political and economic consequences for the independent African states. The organization constitutes an attempt to replace the old system of colonial exploitation by a new system of collective colonialism, which will be stronger and more dangerous than the old evils we are striving to liquidate from our continent. This is another reason why we should come together in a unified African economic plan, which, operating on a continental scale, can make a solid attack on the imperialist domination in Africa. We should, without delay, aim at the creation of a joint African military command. There is little wisdom in our present separate effort to build up and maintain defense forces, which, in any case, would be ineffective in a major world conflict. If we examine this problem realistically, we would ask, which single African state could protect itself against an imperialist aggressor? And how much more difficult this would be when some states are allowing the imperialists to maintain bases on their territories. I have already referred to the military forces with South Africa, its reason, and the danger it poses for the new African state and the struggle of those still in chains. Only our unity can provide us with anything like adequate protection. Those problems can best be met within a unified Africa, and it should be possible in the higher reaches of our endeavor to devise a constitutional structure which will secure the objectives I have outlined and yet preserve the sovereignty of each of the countries joining the Union. Countries within the Union will naturally maintain their own constitutions, continue to use their own national emblems and national anthems and other symbols and paraphernalia of sovereignty. Regional associations and territorial groupings can only be other forms of balkanization unless they are conceived within the framework of a continental union. There are existing models which we can modify or adapt to our pattern. The United States of America, the Soviet Union, India and China have proved the efficacy of unions embracing large stretches of land and population. Long live African freedom fighters. Long live African independence. Long live your struggle. And long live African unity.
And share this video with friends and family to support the channel.
The forces arrayed against us are, and I use the word most carefully, formidable. They are entrenched and powerful. They are, as I have taken some pains to explain, the forces of imperialism acting through their instruments, new colonialism and colonialism, ably assisted by the agents of the Cold War. They operate in worldwide combinations at all levels, political, economic, military, cultural, educational, social, and trade. And not all. And through intelligence, cultural, and information services. They operate from European and African centers using agents who, I'm ashamed to say, are often unpatriotic sons of Africa, buying personal satisfactions with the betrayal of their country's safety and integrity. They seduce leaders. They seduce leaders of the African political, trade union, and people's organizations, thus creating rifts and quarrels within the national front. On the border front, they are amassing their forces in a determined effort to stay the advance of African liberation and the march of unity. It is not accidental that the countries of the European Common Market and those spearheading the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the imperialist powers who have brought in their vassals, Spain and Portugal. Portugal, in fact, since the wars of the Spanish Succession, 1700 to 1714, being a protectorate of Britain, which has enjoyed special trading and unnecessary rights in both Portugal and in the Portuguese territories for over 200 years. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, why Britain has not raised her voice against the atrocities in Angola and other protected Portuguese territories and actually supported Portugal's preposterous claim at Goa in India was an integral part of the multipolitan country. The arms and troops that are pouring into Angola cannot be regarded in isolation from the international organization of imperialism and the Cold War militarism with which they are most definitely linked. It is absurd to think that Portugal, one of the poorest countries in Europe, in effect, could support so large an army, so well equipped as that which is defending her colonial possession in Africa without the active aid he must be receiving from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Nor can we look upon the way in which South Africa is busily building up an armed force equal to any held by the nations of Europe, without sending the international implications that are obviously involved. She has, we hear, a secret military pact with Portugal. And the interlocking imperialist interests collected in the Congo and the Rhodesias, Angola and Mozambique, which are also linked with the great mining and financial interests operating in South Africa, create a chain of allies which seriously threatens both the fight for extending African emancipation from colonialism and independence of the new African state. Now that African independence has been achieved over a large part of the continent, and the national consciousness of Africans from north to south, from east to west, is adding momentum to the struggle for independence. Every kind of means is being used by the colonialists to arrest its progress and defeat its objective. They are attempting many methods, some sinister, some beguiling, to wreck our efforts. They strike antipathetic postures. On one side, they perform acts calculated to strike fear. On the other, they try to hoodwink us with fictitious gifts, which superficially pander to our hopes and aspirations. They are the president's attempts to deflect our purpose, to weaken our determination. Fellow freedom fighters, comrades and friends, it is my great pleasure to welcome you to Accra and to this conference of African freedom fighters and supporters of the growing movement for Africa's liberation and unity. It is good for our cause to have a periodic meeting of this kind to examine our position in the great struggle to rid Africa completely and forever of imperialism and its handmaidens, colonialism and neocolonialism. It gives us the opportunity also to review our strength as well as that of the enemy, and to reorganize our forces and our strategy in order to carry the struggle forward to victory. We have shaped a destiny for ourselves, and no one can alter the course of that destiny. It is the destiny of complete freedom for Africa, the total liberation of our continent, and its political and economic unification. We have achieved some measure of success in this struggle for human freedom and dignity. But we still have a great task ahead. We can only know the extent of our task and our own strength when we have examined and ascertained that of the enemy. Who is the enemy? Fellow freedom fighters, the enemy is imperialism. Which uses as its weapons colonialism and neocolonialism. Let us be very, very clear about this. Let us also not lose sight of the real objective, which is the liquidation of colonialism and imperialism in all its forms, political, economic, ideological, and the political unification of Africa, our dear continent. Then we must ask, what is imperialism? And what are the forms it has taken? And what other mask is it likely to put on? Modern imperialism arose when capitalism had achieved both industrial and financial monopoly, and the competition for raw materials and markets had made it imperative for the advanced industrialized countries to expand into the less advanced parts of the world. This phenomenon led to the partition of the world among the great powers. Asia and Africa were divided up among them. Fellow freedom fighters and friends, African nationalist thinking has been adjusting to internationalism within the continent. The development process that must lead
to the political unification of the African continent. But the objective of African unity can be seriously undermined by tribalism, which provides one of the happiest hunting grounds for the colonialists and new colonialist enemies of African independence and unity. Unless we take this problem of tribalism very carefully in hand, it can undo all our valiant efforts to bring real independence to Africa. We all know the evils of colonialism, but there are some of us who do not appreciate the malevolent possibilities for infinite disruption and even chaos of uncontrolled tribalism, which can make havoc of our hopes and our aspirations. We know that the colonialists are past masters in the policy of divide and rule. They are quick to seize on tribal differences which they discover among us and use this to pit one group against the other. Soon, these superficial differences become exaggerated into serious political factions, which sometimes lead to tragic fratricidal struggles within the same territory. You must guard against it. Guard against it by forging a common united front against the common enemy. The dangers it opens up and the manipulations to which it can be put are too numerous and too threatening for us to ignore it, to ignore its urgent demand for critical and constructive attention. Failure in this task would only risk all the efforts and sacrifices that we have made so far in our common cause and place in jeopardy the future peace and development of the continent. I therefore charge you to place high on your agenda and to give it your most thoughtful and creative consideration. Colonial rule has left a high degree of illiteracy among our people. And we all know that in conditions of ignorance and superstition, it is easy enough to fan internecine feuds. This menace can be met by unity among the leaders and the creation of a nationwide, firmly knit political organization receiving the most complete loyalty and devoted service from all its members, especially its officers and organizing officials in the field. Colonial rule has left the masses of our people poverty-stricken, disease-ridden, while enormous quantities of mineral and agricultural wealth were drained out of Africa year in and year out. I am not making this point merely in order to harrow you with ugly memories. Many of you have been confronted only too recently with the shocking actualities of calculated oppression to be able at this moment to push them out of your minds. I raise this point so that it will stay in your minds when you may be tempted by the seductive promises of new colonialism to forget the real character of colonialist imperialism and be persuaded away from your own true interests and those of Africa. For today, we must each see ourselves as part of Africa in order that we may face colonialist imperialism and its new form, new colonialism, on a continent-wide front. For unity must be the keynote of our actions. Our enemies are many, and they stand ready to pounce upon and exploit our very weakness. They tell us that this particular person or that particular country has greater or more favorable potentialities than the other. They do not tell us that we should unite, that we are all as good as we are able to make ourselves once we are free. Remember, always, that you have four stages to make. First, the attainment of freedom and independence. Secondly, the consolidation of that freedom and independence. Thirdly, the creation of unity and community between the free African states. Fourth, the economic and social reconstruction of Africa. I must again urge the United Nations to see to it that its own declaration on the liquidation of colonialism is given practical effect without further delay. So long as colonialism exists in Africa, Africans cannot help talking the way we do now. And mankind cannot escape the constant threat of war. Africa therefore appeals to the United Nations to live up to its reputation as the greatest bastion of world peace and demands that a meeting of this year's United Nations session should be devoted to the problem of colonialism in Africa. It is folly. It is folly for the colonialists to think that they can hold back forever the progress of history. The process of change is inherent in the interplay of social, economic, and political forces. It is true that these can be hindered and impeded and even bent to different purposes, but not forever. However, we who are concerned with the immediacy of African independence and unity are not prepared to wait upon the evolution of history. We are determined to give history a revolutionary push. We must adopt a positive, all-out anti-colonialist, anti-imperialist attack. And this quickly, for we cannot afford the luxury of delay. Time asks for the enemy, no less than for ourselves. Let us therefore examine our position seriously and objectively to see how well we have managed so far and evaluate our points of weakness and the necessary remedies. Let us determine what modifications are needed to adjust our strategy to counter the movements of the enemy and overcome him. This requires some plain speaking. And for the sake of Africa, let us speak plainly. As I see it, our greatest danger stems from disunity and the inability to see that the realization of our hopes and aspirations, the realization of our objective of total African independence and of our future progress and prosperity is inextricably bound up with the necessity to unify our policy and actions in connection with the continuous struggle for independence and the greater task of economic and social reconstruction beyond it. We must therefore face the issue of African unity now, for only unity will make the artificial boundaries and regional demarcations imposed by colonialism obsolete and superfluous. African unity will thus provide an effective remedy for border disputes and internecine troubles. In a united Africa, there could be no frontier claims between Ethiopia and Somalia, or between Zanzibar and Kenya, Guinea or Liberia, or between Ghana, Togoland and the Ivory Coast. Because we would regard ourselves as one great continental family of nations. Some of the leaders, it must be confessed, do not see the struggle of their brother Africans as part of their own struggle. Even if they did, they would not be free to express their solidarity. These rifts are consciously created by the imperialists between Africans where they can sit back and watch with sly satisfaction, as well as contempt for those who fail to see how they are being used against Africa's best interests. Regrettably, those states include some who were among the freedom fighters of yesterday and who haven't won their independence, are willing to drop it for some token aid and thereby deny to those still struggling for freedom even their moral support. Here is a phenomenon against which all African freedom fighters must be on their guard and resist to the utmost. Even though I appreciate the difficulties facing us, I must admit I find it strange to watch some of us returning willingly to the colonialist fold. This time, they don't even have the excuse of being forced to subject themselves to foreign domination. It makes one wonder, why so much effort and sacrifice and so many lives were given up to the achievement of independence in the first place, if it can only be so quickly and easily surrendered. Unhappily for us, colonialism creates in some intellectual allegiances which are not severed at the moment of independence, but remain to condition loyalties away from Africa towards the metropolis which draws them. They are unable, it would appear, to accept the idea that Africans can get together to make viable and growing concern of a combined African continent, but rather see their salvation in coming together in association like the Franco-African community mooted recently at Bangui. Although there are many here who speak English, French, Spanish, or Portuguese, nevertheless, we are all Africans. Africans fighting for Africa's independence, Africa's unity, Africa's future. I have said that I understand the difficulties of these states which are drawing away from the African community back into that of Europe, faced with the demands of their people for rising standards of living and better social conditions, but charged with economies that can hardly meet the recurrent expenditures of administration and maintenance. They are in dilemma. And standing at their elbows are the new colonialist agents, beckoning them back with a smile into the web of imperialism, though it may have a new look this time and offer the irresistible bait of immediate help. But this help will be far outweighed, as they will experience with no great loss of time, by the knots into which their economies will be tied by the Euro-African Association. Imperialism does not change its nature. It only changes its front. It still needs colonial appendages, whether in name or in fact, to exploit and at the same time to support its Cold War strategy. In the face of this serious threat to our economy and independence in Africa, we must begin to build immediately our own continental common market. For it is easy for anyone who studies the common market organization closely to realize that the common market
is aimed at harnessing the African countries to satisfy the profit loss of the imperialist bloc and to prevent us from following an independent neutralist policy. It is easy to see that the imperialists and the colonialists are determined to retain the African countries in the position of suppliers of cheap raw materials. If we do not resist this threat, and if we throw in our lot with the common market, we shall doom the economy of Africa to a state of perpetual subjection to the economy of Western Europe. This will, of course, hinder the industrialization of our young African states. It is impossible to think of economic development and national independence without possessing an unfettered capacity for maintaining a strong industrial power. The activities of the common market are therefore fraught with dangerous political and economic consequences for the independent African states. The organization constitutes an attempt to replace the old system of colonial exploitation by a new system of collective colonialism, which will be stronger and more dangerous than the old evils we are striving to liquidate from our continent. There is an alternative to Euro-African Association with these deadly implications for Africa's independence and progress. It is in an African economic community in which we can all pool our production and our trade to a common advantage. It is not difficult to imagine that the new colonialists would describe this as a pooling of poverty. It is, however, too simple a distortion of fact. Africa is rich and not poor. As the great wealth that has been taken out of our continent over five centuries of despoliation and extortion very well proves, Africa has immense actual and potential wealth. Gold, diamond, copper, manganese, bauxite, iron ore, uranium, asbestos, chrome, cobalt, a host of other minerals. Our essential agricultural produce have all been drained away by colonialist imperialism. Africa is far from being poor. It is Africans who are poor, not Africa. And they are poor because of the uncounted profit that has been made out of the exploitation of their labor and their lands. If we are being bidden to enter a European community, we must have something that community needs, and needs badly, when it pretends to offer a bonus by way of aid. When Greeks come bearing Greeks, should we not look them well in the mouth? If I may mix my metaphor. But I'm sure you get my meaning. When we new, untried, inexperienced states are flattered into European alliance, we enter not as equals, but as suppliers of primary products at the generosity of industrial competitors. How generous they can be, we have learned from our sad experience over a good long time. Who fixes the prices? Who can play off one against the other by allowing the goods of associates in free of tariff and prisoner tariff on others. As long as it is possible to deal with this singly, one by one, we are at the mercy of the imperialists rather than their generosity. And we shall find ourselves in the same old cleft state of receiving the lowest possible prices for our raw materials, while those of us who are obliged to buy their manufactured goods because of being members of the association will pay for them through the nose. These same states will find themselves tied up in knots which will prevent their going into an open market for their needs of goods and capital investment. And above all, they will lose their option of non-alignment and find themselves dragged into the diplomacy of imperialist Cold War politics, which will operate against the independence and intrinsic interests of Africa. Those of us who cannot see through these implications can only be suffering from an intense myopia. Within our African community, our pooled production will place us in a position to bargain for higher prices and so secure greater revenues out of which we can invest in our development. At the same time, we can trade freely among ourselves and buy from ourselves in the cheapest markets. We can turn for aid to those sources which will give us the most suitable terms while leaving us free to follow our own internal and external policy. But more even than this narrow cooperation, we need a wider continental economic plan which will allow us, within unity, to exploit Africa's tremendous resources for our common welfare and greater African development and progress. If we are really sincere in our desire to see the end of imperialism in Africa, then, apart even from the consideration involved in African unity, we should turn away from any form of association with Europe, which, through its new colonialist control of our policies, will help rather to sustain that imperialism and undermine it. It is bad enough that our economies, as a legacy of colonial rule, are imperialist controlled, and that we have to strive every means to rid ourselves of this economic imperialism and secure our development and progress on solid African foundations. This is another reason why we should come together in a unified African economic plan, which, operating on a continental scale, can make a solid attack on the imperialist domination in Africa. We should, without delay, aim at the creation of a joint African military command. There is little wisdom in our present separate effort to build up and maintain defense forces, which, in any case, would be ineffective in a major world conflict. If we examine this problem realistically, we would ask, which single African state could protect itself against an imperialist aggressor? And how much more difficult this would be when some states are allowing the imperialists to maintain bases on their territories. I have already referred to the military forces with South Africa, its raising, and the danger it poses for the new African states and the struggle of those still in chains. Only our unity can provide us with anything like adequate protection. If we do not unite and combine our military forces, South Africa, along with her allies or any other colonialist imperialist power, can pick us off one by one. Not only that, some of us, out of a sense of insecurity, may be drawn into making defense pacts with imperialists, which will endanger the security of us all. It follows that if we set up in Africa a common economic planning organization and a joint military command, we shall have to work out and adopt a common foreign policy to give political direction to our continental development and our continental defense. Fellow freedom fighters, you may perhaps wonder why I have dwelt at some length with these problems of the unity of independent African states and what relevance they have to our immediate problems of how to overcome the obstacles standing in the way of your own struggle and independence as freedom fighters. I think I have answered any such questions by pointing out that the dangers to the whole subject of your fight for freedom in the fragmentary state of Africa at this present time. Moreover, the moment you have achieved your independence, you will be faced with the practical problems of protecting that independence and securing your viability in order to lay the foundations on which you build up economic and social development. You must know where you are going, what avenues of support await you, which will contribute to your real consolidation and protection amid the problems that will confront you. Those problems can best be met within a unified Africa, and it should be possible in the higher reaches of our endeavor to devise a constitutional structure which will secure the objectives I have outlined, and yet preserve the sovereignty of each of the countries joining the Union. Countries within the Union will naturally maintain their own constitutions, continue to use their own national emblems and national anthems and other symbols and paraphernalia of sovereignty. Regional associations and territorial groupings can only be other forms of balkanization unless they are conceived within the framework of a continental union. There are existing models which we can modify or adapt to our pattern. The United States of America, the Soviet Union, India and China have proved the efficacy of unions embracing large stretches of land and population. When the first 13 states of America tried to promote the idea of a United States, this was ridiculed as an empty dream and vigorously resisted by many. Today, America is the foremost industrial country in the world, and the states within her union number 50 states. And who would have thought that almost 100 different peoples of various levels of economic, social, and political development could have been welded into the majesty which the Soviet Union has become in such space of time. Such short space of time. For example, the example of Europe, which is left in confusion after centuries of mutually destructive economic warfare and competition, because it failed to build a sound foundation for common political action and understanding, should be a lesson for us all. But with the exigencies created by the shrinking of empires, the growing socialist world, and the need generated by the greater productive capacities inherent in present-day techniques, even Europe is now beginning to seek its common association. A
It is paradoxical, therefore, that some African states should be turning away from their proper African affiliations to those of other continents. Rather, we should all be working ceaselessly to bring to fruition the fond hope of African unity, to which we all give lip service and to which most of us are resolutely dedicated. And now, fellow freedom fighters, let me say a few words about the sad development in what looked like hopeful moves towards the unity of the Caribbean islands. It may sound far-fetched, but it has a meaning to us as Africans. We regard West Indians as our brothers. For they have strong ties of kinship with us here in Africa. They, like us, have suffered and are still suffering the iniquities of colonial oppression. I think it's only right that we should show concern over any development which tends to undermine their solidarity and progress. And we have indeed been saddened by the failure of the attempt at federation. How can these little islands hope to stand by themselves in the future any better than they have done in the past? When the trend is towards the creation of bigger units of economic viability, it is most distressing to find that some of our brothers across the Atlantic seem to be unaware of the vital need of the widest possible federation, drawn together by a central government with sufficient powers to make the principle of unified progress a working possibility. It would be tragic, yes, tragic, not only for the West Indians, but also for Africans and other people of African descent, if the islands in the West Indies were to remain apart. For we have reposed so much hope and faith in the emergence of the Caribbean islands as a United States, free and progressive, federated in strength and purpose, and contributed substantially to the total success of our peoples. I hope that the West Indian leaders, who are men of learning and progress, will see the folly and danger of this disuniting development and arrest the process for the good of all concerned. And let's do now. Here in Africa, the increasing activity of freedom fighters all over the continent is one of the most hopeful signs of the victory that must crown our efforts. Many have to take what is not ours, but we have a perfect right to fight for the birthright of freedom and the ownership of our land that has been filched up from us and is being illegally withheld. Inasmuch as our struggle for independence and our subsequent national and continental development is bound up with the question of peace, since our very survival hangs upon the decisions of the great nations, we once more put forward our appeal to them. Immeasurable quantities of money, not to talk of the futile waste of energy, brains, and productive capacity, and put into the manufacture and explosion of most lethal weapons of destruction that man has ever bent his ingenuity to devise. It is a fair comment on the state of Western civilization that this should be regarded as its highest pinnacle of achievement, while millions of the world's population in Asia and Africa, yes, even in Europe and America, exist on the fringe of bare subsistence. We call upon the powers who hold the fate of mankind in their hands to turn away from the production of these appalling means of mass destruction and to devote to peaceful use the harness power of the atom. How excellent it would be if, instead of preparing for the destruction of mankind one barest part of the means financing it, could be used in the rapid development of the less developed parts of the world, and thus destroy colonialist imperialism forever. It is a sad reflection on the leadership of these nations that they should have within their reach the power for doing good and yet refuse to adjust themselves to the opportunity for making effective their ability for doing good. I hope that before long, sanity may prevail and that mankind will receive the benefits of the uncountable wealth now being catapulted into the atmosphere. Long live African freedom fighters. Long live African independence. Long live your struggle. And long live African unity.
Was talking about the fact that we describe these issues a great deal, we talk about them and we analyze them, and we rarely get a chance to talk about solutions. Well, we've been working on solutions. We're going to talk about power not from the point of view of being victimized by it, but by developing it and using it against our enemies. At the last lecture I gave at the Slave Theater, where we were talking about global white supremacy, I initiated this theme on power by saying that we can explain the reasons Europeans victimize us in as many ways as we would like. We could talk about them as being ice people, as against the sun people, and that explanation is valid. Have no problems with it. We can talk about them in terms of their protecting their more recessive genes against our more dominant genes. We can even get into a little psychoanalysis and deal with the myth of length of penises and penis envy, all the other things, and black balls and white balls and brown balls and black holes and white balls rolling into black holes and things of this nature. And all that's fine. That's a lot of fun. But no matter how you explain why or how the European got to the point of victimizing us, I think the essential issue is that the European victimizes us because he can, because he has the power to do so. And we are victimized because we haven't developed the power to prevent his doing so. So in a sense, no matter how we explain why he does what he does, at the end point, he does what he does because he can. And consequently then, I infer from this that we can end his victimization of us when we end his power to do so. And consequently, I want to bring into the domain of discussion in this community the subject matter of power. I want us, in addition to studying black history and culture, to study power, its accumulation, its use, and application. We should talk about it every day and everywhere. We should read about it, and we should develop the means of using it. We should come to understand the nature of how white power is organized. In the end, power does not flow from the genes of white folk. Does that not flow from their ice age? It flows from the nature of their organization and the way they have chosen to relate one to the others. And it flows from their intentionality as a people and their appropriate organization of themselves to realize their intentionality, one of which is, of course, the domination of African people. And that means then that we as African people must study the rules of organization. We must study the means of relating one to each other in such a way that we multiply our power. And we must study our enemy's organization such that we can probe that organization and destroy the power of the enemy. And we can do it. We have a tremendous amount of power in our hands. Right here in America, we are not a weak people by any stretch of the imagination. The only weakness is in our minds and in our imaginations. That's the only place. We are not a dependent people in the material sense, only in the psychological sense. The only thing, ladies and gentlemen, we must get over is our cowardice. That's the only thing. That's the only thing. We can change this. I will speak briefly then to the issue this evening relating to the message that Dr. Bragan brought you last week around this conference titled Genetic Factors in Crime, Findings, Uses, and Implications, which was to occur at the University of Maryland. I've warned you many times, and I've told you many times, I don't know whether it gets through to you or not, but we as black people must get over this thing of looking at schools and universities as advanced vocational training institutions. How many people recall that I've repeated this time and time again? That the function of education is not jobs. That is not the primary function. Children and people are educated. The primary function for education is to advance the interests of a people and to protect their interests, to secure their survival. That the educational structures and institutions of this country are as much a part of its defense, of its armed forces, as are its soldiers. The bombs, the weaponry that this nation uses against other nations and intimidates other nations with, develop out of the universities. The germ warfare, the chemical warfare, political, because some great professor is the head of this particular department, or they have illustrious names in the department, chances are you will never see them teach you in a class. The graduate students on some kind of assistantship will more likely be your teacher. Where are the brains and where are the professors? They're doing research, and often they're doing research on government grants for the government, for the corporations, for the other institutions in the society, and they are part of then the total system of domination of this country. Afrocentric education above all, and even beyond the teaching of African history and African culture, is preparing our children to defend the very lives of African people. Is a military preparation and a preparation for war. It is the means by which we will maintain our biological survival as a people. For if you do not survive, what does it matter if you teach reading to 100% of our children, or they learn math well, or they learn computer science, or all the other things you think are important, when your very lives are in the balance, and it is very likely that they will be snuffed out in the next 10 to 20 years. And yet we still continue to look at schools and colleges and universities as vocational institutions. And here we have then at the University of Maryland, long connected with the U.S. Army, by the way, hosting a conference on so-called genetic factors in crime. Breaking charge that this meeting, which was canceled, was part of a broader program, a violence initiative, a federal government research agenda, so that this program was only a part of a larger agenda. And it was designed to move toward finding a genetic marker that would supposedly identify children at high risk of becoming criminals and to develop plans to deter them through medication. And this is interesting due to the fact that there's little or no real information that links directly in any kind of strong way or even in a mild way a relationship between genes and criminality. There's been no DNA segment that has been discovered that codes for crime. When you think about it, the idea is ludicrous anyway. What is crime? What is violence? What is violence? In other words, I'm asking this question because you have to do a linguistic analysis. There are all forms of what? Violence. There are many different types of what? Crime. Different types of aggression. Not all violence is necessarily bad. There's what we in psychology may call hostile aggression. But there is aggression or violence that may be used in terms of what? Self-defense. Violence may be used to protect your children from attack. Violence may be used to protect the lives of other people. So now, if we're going to get a gene for violence, for a type of violence, or in removing the gene for violence, if we were to find it, which is an unlikely situation, are we also removing a people's capacity to defend themselves and to use violence in their own interest? What I'm saying is then, be very careful when people use words like violence, aggression, crime, and so forth, and ask yourself, what kind of crime? You know, do we have a gene for every type of crime you can name? So that even when we change definitions of crime, a new gene comes into being that we're going to find related to that particular crime. And when we decide that certain other behavior is no longer a crime, will the gene which was coded for that crime disappear? Ludicrous. Ludicrous. I talk in Black on Black Violence about the structuration of crime. That crime follows, the type of violence that we talk about, or crime, even its nature, follows the class structure and follows the skills levels of criminals. You see? Why is there so much so-called violent crime in certain segments of the society? Because when you look at the skills levels of the people committing them, if they were to commit a crime, that's about the only crime they could commit. If they were accountants, they would commit the crime of embezzlement and steal hundreds of thousands or millions because they have a particular ability or skill. And you'd be a fool if you were an accountant or in an S&L where you could steal millions of dollars and then make the public pay billions back and then hang out on the street and knock somebody out in the head. So here we have this crimogenic society that robs our people of skills and other means so that if they decide to participate in a crime, then the probability is that it will be violent by the very nature of the way the society has set them up in the beginning. In other words, the society even determines the type of crime you are most likely to commit itself. Okay? And then it tells you, you're violent. Teach me to be an accountant. I won't hit any more people in the head. I'll just rob them by books. Okay? And then they want to talk about white collar crime and, you know, in the other kind of collar crime. Come on. Wake up. This has nothing to do with genes. It has to do with the nature. I've also told you about reversal, right? I mentioned the fact that in order for us as a people to be in the situation that we're in, we literally have to be turned backwards. We have to think backwards, behave backwardly, deal with the world backwardly. It's necessary. It's the only way the system can maintain itself. Sometimes I say the best way to win an argument is to concede to your opponent. Okay, there is a genetic marker for crime. Let's now look at the criminal records of African peoples and European peoples. The record is clear. If there is a genetic marker for crime, would we look at the fact that the European has committed a crime against every people on every continent, destroyed millions of people, then that argues for his genetic criminality. And that argues then for us to medicate him and control him. You know, the other thing I'm surprised at is we keep being surprised. We keep thinking that this is some new initiative. I mean, the violence initiative began with our enslavement and continues today. We already have fought the violence initiative, ladies and gentlemen. It is already operating. We bought it when we bought learning disabilities, when we bought the concept of hyperactivity, when we bought the concept of impulsivity, when we bought the concept of special education. You're already in it. Connected to these so-called symptoms of learning disability are the very same symptoms they're going to try to connect to the so-called genetic markers. And our children are already being drugged. The violence initiative has already occurred because our youth are already going to jail in record numbers. So why are we talking about these people are initiating something to bring and put our youth in jail? They're already in jail. Those that are not already in jail are in juvenile detention, are under the aegis of the BCWs. You heard it tonight. In the special education program, already being drugged, already being therapized, already having their minds distorted in various ways. And the worst violence initiative program is the public educational system itself. So this so-called initiative that you're talking about tonight is a mopping up operation. That's all it is. If you're telling me in Washington, D.C. and other places, black youth and black people, 75% are in some form of contact with the criminal justice system already, some 60% in any given day in Baltimore and other areas already in contact with the criminal justice system, well then what will this new initiative do? Just make it what? 100%. We should have already been what? Upset. Why are we kicking and screaming now? We should have been screaming already. This initiative is an old trick in psychiatry and psychology. It's a trick that we call the medicalization of social problems. That is to define a social and political problem as a medical problem, and to put psychiatrists, who are doctors, physicians with MDs, in control of the definition of these problems, even though they are an arm of the state, as are social workers, as are psychologists, as are all of the other healthy professionals, but members of the state and arms of the state. But we are so willing to submit to their authority, such that when they define social and political behavior and behavior which has social and political causes in medical terms, even the oppressed and the victimized consent to their mistreatment. Louis Sullivan is a part of this, but in a sense we are all a part of it, because we buy the medicalization of issues. And they know, since we are willing to do anything the doctor says, tells us to do, why are you taking that poison? The doctor said take it every 2 hours. The doctor says. So now if the doctor says that your children have a marker, a genetic marker, then let's go with it. And we don't have time in the evening, one of these days we'll talk about psychiatric power and the role of psychiatrists in the system. Oh, the history of psychiatrists is horrendous. You won't believe it. You won't believe the tortures that have been created in the name of psychiatry, that are even being perpetrated today. You won't believe the robbing of civil liberties, the robbing of freedom and all other kinds of things, the complete destruction and taking away of people's constitutional rights, but in the name of psychiatry. When you medicalize a problem and define it in medical terms, the patient loses all rights. And therefore, you can resolve a lot of issues that, if they were defined politically or socially, would then become constitutional and legal issues. But as soon as they are put under the aegis of medicine, then you reduce, to a very great extent, the legal and constitutional implications. So what we have going here then is an attempt to move social and political problems into the area of psychiatry, so that we, even as African people, can consent to social control and the killing of our people. One quick thing, and I know we're short here. Don't get caught up in this brain and biological basis of behavior. Okay? Don't be deceived because someone can say that they have found a biological correlate with behavior. That means it is genetic in nature, or that means it's congenital, or that means that the society has no responsibility for the behavior that the person is committing. Don't buy that baloney. People run that a lot. You know, as soon as we can locate some kind of brain deficiency and correlate it, then we're ready to say, oh, society is not responsible for it. Are you kidding? Learning and experience physically transforms the brain. Traumatic experiences and even positive experiences changes the biochemical nature of the brain, as well as the neuronal functional organization of the brain, and influences the number of dendrites and synapses and other things that cells use to communicate one with the other. Now, you must understand here then, and I could talk a great deal here about the experiments here that have shown very clearly that if you put certain animals through certain experiences, their brains actually can increase in weight. Let me give you a quick run of things that happens when some rats were placed in various environments. One group was placed in a so-called enriched environment. These rats being selected from the same genetic background, having the same genetic background and the same genetic inheritance. But they were put in under different environments. After they were put through, after they lived in these environments for a while, they were sacrificed and their brains looked at, weighed, measured, and analyzed. Now those rats that were put in an enriched environment, let's look at some of the things that were found. They had an increased thickness of the cerebral cortex, called the gray matter. In other words, the thinking matter of their brain increased in thickness and weight. A 15% increase in the actual size of the neurons in the cortex. Increases in protein in the brain paralleling the increases in cortical weight, indicating that the growth effect was on tissue and not just on the fluid content of the brain. An increase in the amount of dendritic branching, dendrites are the hairy branching fibers which project in large numbers from the body of each neuron and which receive input from other neurons and conduct them to the cell bodies of other neurons. There was an increase in the branching of these neurons and a greater amount of potential information was available to each neuron. An increased number of dendritic spikes per unit length of dendrite. Increases in the number of synapses and the sizes of the contacts between the synapses. An increase in the ratio between the weight of the cortex and the weight of the rest of the brain. A 15% increase in the number of glial cells, and on and on we go. What are we saying here then? That experience changes the brain, changes the nature and the functionality of the brain. So simply because you may find a brain correlate does not take society off the hook. It means then that if society controls the experience of a people, controls their experiences, it is manipulating their brain and controlling its size. And so they want to run a game on you with this biological substrate number. A quick reference here to some tentative research that was noted in the New York Times Wednesday, September 16th. And you should read this piece, and the research is tentative, but read the scientific journals. But there's something interesting here. The headline reads, "Behavior therapy can change how the brain functions," researchers say. Like drug therapy, behavior modification therapy produces metabolic, what do we mean there? Chemical enzymatic changes in the brain and functional changes. That is how different parts and areas of the brain relate one to the other in controlling a behavior and initiating a behavior. Know what I'm saying? Like drug therapy. Behavior modification. This is a non-drug therapy, right? This is a therapy based on social relationships between the therapist and the client. Okay, and that's what we are comparing here. And what does it say here then? Both of these produces metabolic and functional changes in the brains of people with obsessive compulsive disorder. It is the first time that behavior therapy, remember we're talking about a basic social thing here, even though there's some other adjuncts to it, a method that changes the way people think, and I'm emphasizing think, about uncomfortable thoughts or feelings, the way they deal with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings, this therapy particularly relating to obsessive compulsive behavior where people are exhibiting certain attitudes toward compelling thoughts and behaviors. So this therapy, which seeks to change the way they think about these compulsive feelings and think about these thoughts and these urgings that keep telling them to do things, has been shown to physically alter brain function in a mental disorder. And we could go on, the piece was longer, I brought this up to get those who might think that we only talk about rats. What are we saying here then? That the very nature of human relations itself contains the functional nature of the brain. The idea being then that even when they come to you and tell you that there's some kind of correlation between a brain functionality and a particular behavior, don't fall for the okey-doke that necessarily means that the society is not responsible for producing that behavior. Society shapes the brain as it shapes other things as well. I'll move on quickly here. The theme of black-on-black violence, the book, is that the alleged criminality of black males will be used to justify the repression of the African-American community and quite possibly its genocidal annihilation. In other words, the running theme of the book, Black on Black Violence, is this, that the alleged criminality of African males will be used as a major rationale so that when this society decides that it will annihilate this community, the other members and nations and people in the world will buy it because they have been convinced that we are innately criminal. And what I'm trying to get across in there then is how this propaganda is developed. This is why, despite what you say from a logical point of view, despite the fact you may say this is not the majority of our youth who are in jail, the vast majority of our youth are not engaged in violent behavior. The majority of people on welfare are not black people. The majority of people in prisons are not black folk. You know, you can lay one fact after another, and yet what happens? The people still insist in seeing it as a black problem, don't they? When you lay evidence and facts before a people, even evidence and facts that they themselves have collected, and they still insist in seeing you in a particular way, then you must recognize that they are seeing you in that way because it is important to their own psychological state of being and because it serves their own interest. Yes. And you must ask the question then, why are they obsessed about projecting this kind of image? And you will see then that it is there to rationalize their behavior against you. They're not, and therefore, as I will say a little later on, this idea of arguing with these people point for point is not what the game is about. It's not what it's about. Let me quickly move on. I want to lay a context, because often we discuss these issues out of context. And I've told you before, that I've told you in Black on Black Violence, that European sociology, psychology, and so forth decontextualizes issues, meaning that it discusses violence or crime as if they do not exist within a social context, as if they do not have a history, as if they do not serve a function in the society. So you're made to look directly at the behavior and the behavior only, and to judge it and treat it without looking at the context in which it occurs and look at how the context itself may create the behavior. And even behavior therapy plays this game, by the way. Okay? You must start at the context first before you discuss these problems. What is the context? The context is this, that we are a dominated people. We are dominated by European people. Am I making myself clear? Yes. This is where we start. This is where you start. We are under the control of another people. We are vulnerable to that other people who are holding our lives and the quality of our lives in their hands. That's the fact you must start with. The second fact is, domination is a social problem. Am I clear here? Domination itself is a problem. It is a social problem, particularly for the dominated, isn't it? Even if it's for the dominator, it's still a social problem. Keep this in mind. Domination, therefore, generates the very existence of domination means that a social problem has been what? Generated. Huh? You can't have domination without having a what? Social problem. So domination generates a social problem, and as long as it exists, it maintains that social problem. As long as you're under the domination of Europeans, you will have social problems. There are some idiots among us who think that they can leave the European in control of African people and get justice and peace. It is not possible. Domination is built on injustice. And you cannot then leave the European in power over black people and then expect to be to receive justice. It's illogical. It's not possible. Domination benefits the dominator. We are dominated because it what? Benefits those who dominate us. Therefore, the dominator benefits from the social what? Problems. In other words, the problems of black people benefit white folks. And they are created for their benefit, and they are maintained for their benefit. And therefore, those who dominate us have an investment, monetarily and every other way, in perpetuating the symptoms of maladjustment in us as a people, and they engage in interactions that reinforce those problems. That's why no matter what kind of program they lay out for you, it does not resolve the social problems that they claim they are designed to resolve. And I'll be through in just for a second or two here. The problems of the dominated provide evidence which justifies their domination and supports their own domination. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the major outcomes of power and one of the major benefits of being powerful is that you can generate the evidence to justify your power and to justify your domination. Why, when I go to prison, I see that 56% of you are in this prison. Therefore, we are justified in controlling you. But then we forget how what? They created the problem so that 56% could be in there. Now then, as the gentleman who wrote Blaming the Victim put forth, and I will say, first of all, this problem is created. Our problems are needed. This is what I'm arguing in Black on Black Violence, that this society needs the criminality of black males. It needs the fantasy that black males are criminals. It is necessary to the very structure and being of this society. It is very necessary to the self-definition of Europeans. It is very necessary to maintaining their domination and advancing their domination. Therefore, they must create these problems, or they must even imagine that these problems exist where they truly do not exist. Therefore, they create the problem, and then, as Ryan argues, first they identify the social problem, second they study those affected by the problem and discover in what ways they are different from the rest of us, this great underclass. How are they different from the rest of us? And you know now, arguing black on black, that the so-called criminals in the jails are not any different from any of the rest of us. You're not going to find a criminal personality, you know, and yet that's been the golden grail of psychology. You know, how can we distinguish these people from the rest of us? We're all in this game together. Third, they define the differences as the causes of the social problem. In other words, we create the problem. Then we go in and look at the people who have the problem and see how they're different from those who don't. And then we say, oh, their differences is the reason why they have the problems. You see? So they're going to create these brain dysfunctions. Then go in and find the brain dysfunction. And then say the brain dysfunction is the cause of the problem. Now let's medicate. So they define, they use the differences, and finally they assign a government bureaucrat to invent a humanitarian action program to correct the differences. I asked my class the other night, what if we could find a 100% sure shot rehabilitation program? A program that would rehabilitate 100% of the clients. Would that solve your problem? No, because what would happen? The others would keep what? Rolling in. Rolling in. So rehabilitating the ones who have the problem does not solve what? The original what? Cause of the problem. And again, we have people who entered into the wrong point of the equation. Let me get here then and say, these controversies such as the one we are dealing with now, they speak to the need for domination to justify and maintain itself. Howard then stated, the establishment, whatever rewards it gives us, will also, if necessary, to maintain its control, kill us. Hear that, black bourgeoisie. A part of your being promoted in American society is to maintain control of the black community. The day that your death is necessary also to maintain control and to maintain white power, they will kill you as well. And I want you to keep this in mind then. I don't want you to fall into the trap of discussing this particular issue. We fall into a trap by concentrating on the scientific and methodological details. You know, well, there's no genes. When you find it, forget all that nonsense. And get caught up in personalities. Well, Goodwin is an evil guy. You know, Louis Sullivan is a... Screw all of that. It's the same kind of thing you have with Columbus. If Columbus had not discovered America, some other European would have. Even if you could step back into history and kill Columbus, you're still in the same shape you are right now. Because what is the essential problem here? Columbus didn't build the ships. Columbus didn't build the technology. It was European technology, political and economic organization that made it possible for Columbus to come over here. And it was European technology, organization, intentionality that made it possible for them to overrun the Indian nations. What you had here then were two different cultures and two different technologies and two different ways of thinking facing each other, and one ran over the other. Not Columbus. I want you to get out of the personality issue and deal with the deep issue. You are facing a society and a culture. You are facing an organization that will put man after man after man in front of you, but it will still run its same program. You must learn to cripple the organization, not the person. This is an old argument. It's the same kind of old game that went on with the genetic basis of intelligence. This is the same old game refried. What do we have here? Let's look at the deeper issue. And the deeper issue involves the need to justify domination, social control, and to obscure the very real way deficiencies are created by power relations. Quick question here. Why are whites obsessively concerned with the intelligence of black folks? This is the thing you must ask first before you get into whether it's environment or gene. Ask the major question. Why are you interested? What's the point? Huh? Why is it so what? Important for you to know. What are you going to do with the knowledge? This is the issue. What would be the result if it was definitely and irrefutably established that blacks are innately less intelligent than whites? Let's ask that question. Let's ask another one. Are we found irrefutably that we were more intelligent than whites? What would be the results? Are just as intelligent as whites, or that environment is really significantly influential in determining intelligence? What would be the result if we discovered either one of these things? What would be the result if we proved that blacks were genetically more docile than white folk? The end result would what? Be the same. Would be the same. Nothing is going to change. Why? The findings, whatever their nature, will be used to justify and rationalize the social control of black people by white people. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, if they proved that we were innately less intelligent than they would justify domination, wouldn't it? Yeah. We are more intelligent, therefore we have a right to rule over you. But then if you prove to them in your great work that you are more intelligent than they are, well, these people are more intelligent than we are. We should suppress them while we can, because if we let them loose, they will take over. So the repression would still take place, and it would still be argued. Well, they are as intelligent as we are, and that means one day they may compete with us, so let's still what? Repress them. Oh, you mean the environment is truly significant in intelligence. So what would the result be then? Let us control what? The environment to control their intelligence. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, the final come down of it all, no matter how you refute these people, no matter how much detail you roll out one way or the other, they will always be used to do what? Justify repression and oppression. That is the issue, not making fine pointed arguments as to whether IQ tests are culturally based or genetically based or this so-called initiative here. It's pointless. What we have going here is an attempt by people who are dominating us to create new rules and means by which they justify their domination and repression. That's all that's going on here. Screw whatever excuse they rolled up in time. The only thing that has changed by any so-called new initiative, such as the one we're talking about today, is the logic of justification for continuing domination and the methodology of domination. That's the only thing that's changed. Nothing has changed by this new initiative. All they said, well, their violence is a medical problem, and therefore, now the methodology for that is to do what? Cut their brains out and medicate them and so forth. But the end result is still what? Domination and control. Thus, the central issue revolves around power and domination and maintaining the relative powerlessness of black people and finding rationales for doing so. For a very sizable percentage of black problems flow from the nature of black and white power relations. These problems that we are dealing with flow from our powerlessness, from the power differential between blacks and white folk. They reflect the differences in power between us as people. Nothing else. No brain issues here. The issue then for the black community is this: how to break white power and the will of whites and any other ethnic group to dominate and exploit African people. And I'm telling you, any other ethnic group, because whites are not the only ones who are moving in place to dominate African people. And the issue then is this, and you must keep this in mind. This must be our agenda. This is our agenda, to break the power of people to control our lives. This is the agenda. An agenda set by us, not by others. Our program for change and empowerment, for enhancing the education of our children, for maximizing our quality of life, should continue regardless of academic and social debates regarding the social or genetic bases of criminality, intelligence, and so forth. What am I saying? We must keep focused on changing the nature of power in this world. Regardless of the debates about what is going on. If you get caught up in the details, you're going to lose the focus. One other thing, and I'm through. We got some people out here looking for conspiracies. I want to note this because I see a lot of this going on, and there are people on the circus getting over on the conspiracy number. And there are others, you know. Let me just warn you about one thing, black people. You must think in terms of a nation. You must think of yourself as a nation. It's very important that you think of yourself as a nation. Many of the issues that you see confronting you can become very clear if you think of yourself as a nation surrounded by other nations. I tell people, I haven't written a second book on the cause of violence, the economic cause of violence, but there is an economic cause. I talked about the psychodynamics in black on black, but there's another part of the story, which is the economics. Quickly, it's like this, ladies and gentlemen. If you saw black people in the United States as a nation, you would recognize that to a very great extent, the social disorganization that we complain about, the breakdown of families and institutions, the criminality of our children and so forth, is the result of the fact that as a nation, black people are suffering from a negative trade imbalance, from a trade imbalance. In other words, black people have an overwhelming national debt. What do we mean by that? It means that more of your money, earnings, income are flowing out than what? Are flowing in. You jumped for equal opportunity and you educated your most talented people and you sent them away from you and sent them to work for other people, and the monies they earned, you told them to live among those other people so they contribute their brains and skills to your enemies and spend their monies among your enemies and enhance their power, and now they become neoconservatives and join the attack on the African community. You understand what I'm saying? Anytime a nation buys more than it sells, anytime that a nation ships its wealth out in great bundles, anytime a nation lets other alien groups, Arabs, Koreans, and others, and whites, come into its midst and take its money out, and then let the drug dealers scrape up the rest and take that money out, their institutions are going to collapse on their heads. Your families are breaking up because they do not have the economic floor that they need to keep them there. Your children are going wild because you don't have the money to give them the appropriate education and recreation and other kind of things you need. You cannot build the institutions that you need to maintain the viability of your society because you're giving it to everyone else. And you're shipping it out. And therefore you suffer from it. Now, with this view in mind, what does this mean? You can solve this problem to a very great extent if you think of yourself as a nation, remove the aliens from your midst, and thrust out into the world and earn wealth and money and bring it back to your nation and watch its prosperity increase and watch the people become more civil with one another, build the kind of institutions to create the kind of schools you want. But until you do that, it's not going to happen. This is the program. Conspiracy, then. There are people out here looking for the mad scientist who made the AIDS gene. And now they're looking at Goodwin. Is he? Oh, he's the madman that's getting ready to run the nuts sort of thing. And there are others who are in the government huddling around. Screw all that. Stop wasting your time hunting for the smoking gun. When you are a nation, you recognize one thing. When you discover the conspiracy, it's too late. Yeah, it's too late. When you discover it, it's too late. If you are a nation, you know what you act on as a nation? You act on capability of your enemy. They can be your friends, as a matter of fact. They can have good relationships with you. But the moment they develop the capacity to destroy you, you don't worry about whether they hate you or love you or they're conspiring against you. You recognize that they have the capacity to destroy you should they want to. You don't search for the conspirators. You search for a way to defend yourself against one, should it occur. It's the fact that whites have the capacity to use AIDS that should move us to build a defense. That they have the capacity to destroy African nations that should move us to build a military. That they have the capacity to destroy our people in economic warfare. Not whether they are thinking of doing so or whether there's some person who's doing so. Screw that. Don't put the energy in what? Building a defense and an offense on the fact that they are capable of doing so. All right? It's necessary. So, ladies and gentlemen, our eyes, we should do what? Keep the agenda on changing the power relationship, empowering ourselves so that we can defend ourselves regardless of the type of conspiracies any groups have against us. So what does it mean, ladies and gentlemen? Keeping our eyes on the prize. And that prize is power. Power to the people. Thank you very much.